The Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN with Jason Turner, Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Jason, another update on the markets, right?
Another update, another positive report on inflation to spur that forward.
Yeah, so that's what's driving the market this week?
Yeah, we've had two good inflation days in a row, consumer price inflation yesterday and producer price inflation, the prices business pay for their inputs today, and both of them pretty positive in terms of inflation continuing to slow.
So the one's the wholesale price, I guess, index, right?
Correct. That's today's for producers and yesterday's for consumers.
And what was the number today?
Today, the increase in the prices producers pay for those inputs is a 12-month falling rate. So we've fallen for 12 months in a row, up just 0.1% in June, with the headline rate of inflation there for producers coming in at just 1.09%.
Well, we know that
year over year.
The Fed wanted, 2% inflation, but that was for consumers. Do they have a target for producers or for the people to buy products wholesale?
No, the Fed's focused on the consumer rate of inflation. The Fed really uses personal consumption expenditures, which will come out later this month, as their main gauge of inflation. We get CPI data earlier, that consumer price number from yesterday, and that's the number we'll pivot off of for consumers. Producers, though, typically lead consumers. So obviously, as businesses pay less for the goods they need to produce their outputs, they can pass some of those savings gains on to consumers. So lower producer inflation today likely means lower consumer inflation down the road.
Well, it doesn't sound like it can get much lower. I guess you could have negative. Is that a good thing if the price of goods for them is actually on the negative side, or is that a sign of something else bad in the economy?
Yeah, generally, we want to avoid deflation. Inflation is sort of a Goldilocks type measure where we want to see the right amount of inflation. Too much is bad, too little is bad.
Can we extrapolate something from this number, though? I mean, this is good news, right? So what does this mean down the road?
Yeah, we can certainly extrapolate from this that either on a headline basis, which is a 1% number, or on a core basis, so we'll exclude energy and food, which the producer prices fell by are up just 2.8% over the last year, that the prices paid to create the goods we buy as consumers are lower, meaning the prices we pay as consumers going forward shouldn't inflate as fast as they have over the last 12 months in the coming months.
So what does the Federal Reserve do about interest rates as a result of these lower numbers, this continuation of falling prices?
This continuation of falling prices is a net positive. However, I don't think it's enough to dissuade the Fed from their intention in July that was, I think, pretty clearly communicated after the June meeting of an additional 25 basis point hike at their meeting at the end of the month. That, however, given the inflation data we saw today, if we see that persist, likely is the last hike this cycle before the Fed pauses more resolutely.
And would that maybe forestall or maybe we won't have a recession? What do you think about that?
I think the base case is still that we are headed to some form of a mild recession or what the Fed would interpret as a soft landing, given the amount of monetary policy change we saw last year. We had four successive 75 basis point hikes in monetary policy, and it doesn't appear that the full impact of those rapidly rising rates has really worked its way through the economy yet, and likely won't until we get through the balance of this year.
I wonder then if, well, we remember that the Fed was too late to the game, if in fact on the back end of this cycle they handled it correctly.
Yeah, the general thought around the Fed is they're often too late and often do too much, although they are slowing here on the back end, and yeah, that's probably the appropriate approach.
Hey, speaking of Taylor Swift, did you hear about me referencing that the Federal Reserve has credited the Taylor Swift tour for boosting the travel industry in cities throughout the country? Hotel revenues on her blockbuster Eras tour are setting records in almost every city she goes to.
I have no doubt. My wife and daughter certainly went to a Taylor Swift concert, not here in Chicago because we couldn't find tickets. So I can definitely see that. Although you look at Delta's result today from an earnings perspective, and it's not just the Taylor Swift concert driving travel. We are seeing robust numbers from international travel. Americans are definitely making use of travel and leisure for their dollars and their expenditures.
Whether they can afford it or not, right?
Yeah, true. We've seen consumers largely use up all of that stimulus money. We peaked at over $4.5 trillion in savings. That's largely been spent. And we're back down to about $700 billion in savings, which is about where we were before the pandemic. At the same time, we've seen an increase in revolving credit for consumers. We're up to about $1.4 trillion from about $200 billion. So a significant increase in the use of credit. So we continue to spend even if we don't have those dollars in the bank.
One contact highlighted that May was the strongest month for hotel revenue in Philadelphia since the onset of the pandemic, in large part due to Taylor Swift fans coming into the city. This is not the first time the government agency has credited Swift. In Cincinnati, officials credited the Swift Eras tour with helping downtown hotels gross $1.3 million and surrounding Hamilton County with $2.6 million. Last month, Chicago's official tourism and marketing organization Choose Chicago said the first weekend in June broke hotel occupancy records, and they have similar numbers in Boston and everywhere that she goes. Canada is wishing she would come north of the border. Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting, and we'll see if that persists outside the United States as that tour goes international. We're certainly seeing some the information out of France with some of the problems with Ticketmaster there.
Yeah.
We'll see if that economic impact helps areas of the world where they haven't quite had the robust economic experience we have in the United States over the last 12 months.
Jason Turner is a chief investment strategist and married to a wife with a daughter who is a Taylor Swift fan at Wintrust Wealth Management. Wintrustwealth.com is the website. Jason, nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too, John.
David Carnoy joins us, executive editor for the reviews at CNET. And we've asked him to join us today to review how the Amazon Prime Day did. David, welcome to the show. How did they do?
It looks pretty good. I mean, I think our traffic was looked to be up from last year, and that usually means there are more sales. But it's always wait, the dust is still settling. So it just ended yesterday, and there's still some deals going on right now. So we're still covering that stuff.
So how does Prime Day work? Is it 24 hours? Is this something halfway to Christmas? Has that been the strategy? And didn't they have more than one Prime Day in the last couple of years?
Yeah, they have. And they it's sort of essentially, you know, Black Friday in July, if you want to call it that. So it's a way for Amazon to sort of spur the whole spending of people on a lot of their own devices, of course. But it's actually 2 days now. They call it Prime Day, but it actually goes over about 48 hours. So it's a little bit of a misnomer that they call it Prime Day.
Go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, what was sort of interesting this year is they actually invited people to deals before Prime Day. So you could sign up and get an email to exclusive deals. So that was something that was new this year. There's usually with Prime Day, there's a lot of people are buying cheaper stuff. So one of the top sellers was, you know, batteries and, you know, little household items. And of course, a lot of Amazon products. So Amazon had some earbuds on sale. It had its video streamer on sale. It's, you know, Kindles. And then you have, weirdly, you have people buying stuff that's on sale, but it's kind of on sale all the time. That includes one of the best-selling products was the Apple AirPods Pro 2, which Amazon sells for $200. The list price on them is $250, and that's kind of always their price, but it was one of the top sellers on Prime Day. They had some deals on Apple products, and Apple products are always popular when they have any sale on them.
I guess you get people in the door, and even if it's the price that's been there all along, now they're in the door and they tend to buy, huh?
Yeah, and there are definitely some genuine deals. I'm going by what sort of I bought I bought one of those aero garden hydroponic gardens. I'm going to have my kids grow some, maybe grow some lettuce because food's still a little bit expensive these days. But that was on kind of a super sale. It was only a $50 item. And also, believe it or not, I bought a cordless phone. Mine's dying. I still have a landline. It's dying after, my cordless phone is dying after about 15 years.
I love that. A guy from CNET bought a phone. But, you know, in my cable package or whatever I've got at home, I'm paying for a landline, and I don't have a landline plugged in, wireless or otherwise. And I think that's dumb on my part, but I just literally don't have a phone. So I don't think that's such a bad idea. The power goes out, maybe your phone, you can't find it, whatever. Having a landline's a good idea.
Yeah, and actually the one I bought, you can there's a Bluetooth connection to it. So if you have bad reception, you can use your landline to make a call with your cell phone. So you can get cell phone calls. So that it's a little bit more high tech than your standard cell phone, cordless phone.
I read that customers purchased over $375 million during the first day of deals, saving $2.5 billion overall. That's a statement from Amazon. I suppose those are real numbers, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, in theory, the economy is pretty good. The stock market's been pretty good. I think people are a little bit more of in a spending mood, hopefully. So I think that I would guess they'll announce that they did better than last year. But it's on our site, it seemed to be the traffic seemed to be have ticked up from last year's deal. So hopefully the holiday buying season will also be good. And some of these deals will obviously going to return for the holiday buying season. These are, if you missed them this time, a lot of these will return.
Yeah. It's just funny to me how some, to me, if at a day like this, where, hey, it's the big sale, and then you go buy your TV or you go buy that high-end item that you've been putting off until you can save some serious money. But when I look at some of the items that did well, they are, like you said, a pack of batteries or a cordless phone or a smart scale that was $34, but now it's $26. But again, I guess my suspicion is, tell me if you think there's any possible truth to this, that now they're in the store and, hey, that's a good price and I wasn't thinking about it, but I think I'll get it. You know, I wonder if people shop Amazon's Prime Day that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is sort of impulse buys, and you know, we'll try to tell people this is the lowest price we've seen on the product, so that at least you know, like, it's, you know, $10 less or $20 less, yeah, than the best price. There were some good deals on, you know, Sony headphones that really were the lowest price of the year. So it is a chance, if you are looking at a certain product, to grab it if it does dip to that price that you're looking for. And then a lot of people just kind of, they're in there and they're poking around, and you know, there's an itch to buy when you see a sale.
Yeah,
and you,
sure,
just, you know, hit the buy button. It's rather easy to do on Amazon.
Next thing you know, you're growing your own lettuce. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, good luck to you on that. And if you go to CNET.com right now, you do see the Amazon Prime Day deals that you can still buy for under $50. It's nice to visit with you, David. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
David Carnoy does reviews at CNET. We like to pay attention here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, really the WGN Radio, when a lot of folks come to town, 3,500 of them in Chicago with 100-plus speakers at Tech Week Chicago. Let's talk a little bit about who's here and what they're doing with Abin Kuriakose, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer at World Business Chicago. Abin, welcome back. I understand you guys are a partner in this event, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Second edition. And again, thank you so much for letting us share more about the story. What we're seeing now is this incredible movement for the Chicago tech ecosystem. 10 years ago, barely 200 startups in Chicago raised $1 billion in growth capital. In the past 2 years, over 500 startups here in Chicago have attracted more than $10 billion in both private equity and venture capital dollars. And what we're doing here for Tech Chicago Week is 35 events from Monday to tomorrow. Today is the big day, Tech Chicago Week, in Navy Pier in the big ballroom. And we have over 3,000 registered participants. And it's all about celebrating our innovators, our founders, our technologists, and the people that drive technology and innovation in Chicago.
Is it one of those things where everybody's got a booth set up and you walk around and pick up swag bags?
It's we do have a couple of hubs. We have hubs here, and the whole purpose of the hubs of our immersive experiences. One of the things that we think about both at P33 and World Business Chicago are what are sectors where Chicago has a right to win. So we have a Discover financial services hub talking about financial technology and or fintech. United talking about the role of technology in the aviation industry. A life science hub that includes many of our life science startups, and also a hard tech hub led by M Hub. And that's just one of the few hubs that we have for people to learn more about some of the most compelling innovation opportunities in Chicago's best sectors.
Are you connecting investors with companies, or what actually happens there?
That is a big part of it. So I think there's three big focus areas. We did have specific programming that was focused on connecting local Chicago startups with investors. And that's the investor matchmaking that we want to do for our city. We want to attract more growth capital to fuel our Chicago startup ecosystem. This morning, we had a youth summit. So we're inviting local students here in Chicago to understand there are some incredible career opportunities right here in your backyard and not just limited to Silicon Valley. And we're also inviting the general public. I think today what Navy Pier, today what we're doing here at Navy Pier Tech Chicago Day is inviting the public to understand what makes technology and innovation in Chicago. What we say all the time is that Chicago doesn't need to be the next Silicon Valley. Chicago just needs to be the best Chicago, and we believe the world can't compete with our best.
Aben Kuriakose is on a line with us. He is the Chief Innovation and Strategy Officer at World Business Chicago. Is there a sector or a kind of tech which seems to be hot or that Chicago is best positioned for?
Yeah, what we're seeing is, especially from a World Business Chicago perspective, the sectors where we think Chicago has a right to win is food and ag, healthcare and life sciences, transportation, distribution and logistics, manufacturing and financial services or fintech. So in food and ag, you can think about alternative protein startups that's providing more sustainable solutions in the marketplace. In hard tech, a very strong focus on climate tech and energy innovation. And Chicago was actually one of the top markets in the country when it came to life sciences in recent years, especially with an amazing pipeline of brand new wet lab space. That's the technical space you need for real estate. And then we're also seeing, while other cities have been hyper-focused on crypto, we've been seeing a growing fintech ecosystem that's offering innovative solutions for our big financial services companies here. So what we want to make sure to do is that we are reflective of the economy in Chicago. Chicago is the most diverse economy in the United States, and we know technology and innovation has a role to play in each one of those sectors. We want to tell a multi-sector story here in Chicago.
Is there an AI story there today?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a big focus for investors and startups. It's going to be a topic, especially for many of our speakers today, about the role of AI in multiple places. A good example of this is a company called Tempus, a World Business Chicago board member that offers an AI solution for early cancer detection. And so there's going to be definitely discussions about AI's application in each one of these sectors.
No kidding. What is Scottie Pippen going to talk about?
He's going to talk about why Chicago leads as the best sports town in the world and sort of the connectivity and intersection between tech and sports. And what we want to do today for Tech Chicago Day is talking about our superpowers. Chicago is the best sports town in the world. We have a thriving tech and startup ecosystem. We want to build a bridge between our tech community and culture, and Scotty's really going to focus on that narrative.
Aben, do you have a sense about how the rest of the world, maybe these 3,500 conventioners that are coming to town, feel about Chicago? I'm a little defensive about our posture these days. I think it's a terrific place, but I don't know if other people outside of our city agree with me on that.
That's why today is so important. I think what we've seen consistently, and from a World Business Chicago perspective, we operate the Chicago Venture Summit, which is the city's flagship startup conference. We partner with P33 for Tech Chicago Day. What we've seen consistently for out of town folks is they come here, it feels like home. They are attracted to our Midwest culture and Midwest values, and they're attracted to what Chicago has to offer. And so the one thing we've seen consistently with out of town investors, students, technologists, innovators, is when they come to Chicago, they fall in love with it. And I think that's what we need to do in telling our story better. We have the saying that we want to break our Midwest modest and show the world our Midwest best. And that's what Tech Chicago Day is going to prove today.
Tell them we don't have that many tornadoes, really.
Exactly right. And, you know, one of the things they're going to see today is right here in beautiful Navy Pier. Today, obviously, the flagship of Tech Chicago Day during Tech Chicago Week. It's the perfect, I think, kind of Chicago opportunity. We're coming here to Navy Pier. It's a beautiful view of our lake and our city. It's going to be incredible conversations with our keynotes and our panels. Our panels are reflective on the sectors I shared with you before, the sectors where Chicago has a right to win. We also have Nadia Rollinson, who's the new co-owner of the Chicago Sky WNBA, and she herself has a background in tech and a venture partner. We have Scotty, and we also have AO from the Chicago Bulls. But we also have Chris Gladwin, which is one of the world's kind of brightest technologists, who is the CEO and co-founder of Ocean and has been building multiple companies here in Chicago. So you can see what we're doing for Tech Chicago Day. We're talking about what's exciting about the future. We're talking about what Chicago is known for, especially when it comes to sports. And we're doing it at an iconic location on Navy Pier.
Yeah. And I suppose if they're in town that long, they've had a chance to sample some of the restaurants and food in the city too, huh?
100%. We had 35 partner events today. We are super impressed because World Business Chicago led multiple partner events, which were incredibly well attended. If you go to gotechchicago.com, you'll see all 35 partner events. Today is obviously the big day of Tech Chicago Day. Tomorrow we have a series of partner events. So I recommend everyone to check out the schedule and you can explore the city that way.
Mm. Yeah, nicely done. Really, I appreciate the energy and the enthusiasm you have for this event. Keep growing it and keep doing what you're doing, Aubyn.
Thank you. And I want to make sure we make an invitation to all. You know, Tech Chicago is all about how do we talk about Chicago in the future, the role technology and innovation has here in our city. It's not just a Silicon Valley story. It's very much a Chicago story. And Chicago has a pretty compelling story to talk about when it comes to our entrepreneurs, our investors who are making big bets here, and companies that are growing and thriving here in our city.
You want me to click on worldbusinesschicago.com? Is that a good place to start?
That's a great place to start. You can also go to gotechchicago.com to see the full schedule. Also follow us on social media, World Business Chicago P33, and Tech Chicago, and you'll see all the updates for all of this week, especially entrepreneurs and fund managers who are talking about the next big ideas here in our city.
GoTechChicago.com, among the websites he just mentioned. Aubyn Kuriakose, nice to talk to you, Aubyn.
Thank you for the opportunity. Happy Thursday.
More business news, Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A community center planned and spearheaded by Pastor Corey Brooks will include a Wintrust financial branch. The 90,000-square-foot center is slated for opening in late 2024 in Chicago's Woodlawn neighborhood. In the meantime, the bank says it'll open a temporary branch at 66th and King Drive later this year. The area is considered to be a banking desert. Brooks is pastor of New Beginnings Church and founder of Project Hood. He's been raising money for the past year for the $35 million project. Wintrust has contributed $1.5 million of the $30 million raised so far. United Airlines will allow some passengers flying first class to charge their phones without plugging them in. The airline is making an upgrade to its first class cabin that will also feature larger tray tables, tables between seats, and larger seatback video screens. United will be the first domestic carrier to offer wireless charging. The airline will still offer plug-in chargers. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Thank you. Today we go to Kankakee County, where when we last talked with farmer Dave Wolf, he told about how his farm had burned down.
Yeah, I lost all my farm, all my machinery, 11 tractors, combines, all my vegetable equipment.
And also gone was a big source of revenue, his on-farm farmers market, which became popular during the pandemic. But this year, he'll tell us after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for being our sponsor. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Dave Wolf, a fire wiped you out last year, and now?
We're back 100%.
And his very popular sweet corn, some of the earliest around, is ready, so...
Saturday is going to be the grand opening of Wolfie's Farm Stand here in Kankakee, Illinois.
Right there on the farm where everything's grown.
Right there on the farm.
I suggested Dave rename his farm stand Phoenix, you know, rose from the ashes.
No.
Dave says he's had enough with ashes. So, sweet corn is ready.
It's looking very, very good. We got green peppers ready. Got a lot of stuff going on. We got zucchini coming on big time. We got kohlrabis. We're going to have cantaloupe this weekend, and we possibly will have watermelon by next weekend. We pushed hard this year.
Any tomatoes yet?
It's very early for tomatoes. We're probably a month out for tomatoes and cucumbers.
And this is a first for a farmer's market, as far as I've heard, cigars.
Yeah, Big Fellas Mobile Cigar Lounge, a 30-foot trailer. They're bringing a lot of attraction down here to Kankakee to every event they come to.
What's also back after the fire and the pandemic are the Chicago restaurants, who were important customers for Wolfie.
Yep, we got them back on track.
You can find Wolfie's Farm Stand just outside Kankakee. It's on Facebook at Wolfie's Farm Stand. That's Wolfie with a U.
8 in the morning till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And if people get here a little bit late, hey, we're going to be here. And they show up a little bit early, we're going to be here.
What will people see when they pull in?
They're going to see a whole new set of buildings, a whole lot of great produce and a warm, friendly smile from me.
Saturday, back from the ashes, the grand reopening of Wolfie's Farm Stand in Kankakee. From the farm to your belly, today's National Beans and Franks Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Andrew Clark is the president of Ground Floor Partners. We'll talk a little bit about the green movement with Andrew. Welcome to WGN. Andrew, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Tell me about what your business does.
Well, I have a small business, Ground Floor Partners, and I work with startups, established small businesses, and nonprofits, mostly on market research, planning, strategy, and then also management consulting. And I, you know, one of the components of my business is trying to support the green movement. So I try to be an advocate for sustainability and climate justice and, you know, impute those values to all my clients.
Is that good for their business, or is that just trying to be a good steward of the earth?
It can be both. And you know, that's one of the challenges is that, you know, most of my businesses, most of my clients are pretty small. You know, I mean, a big client for me is $10-15 million of revenue. So they don't have huge corporate executive teams, and they don't have enormous resources. They spend most of their time actually just trying to keep the business afloat and growing things. So what I always advocate is, you know, start small. And, you know, there are a lot of opportunities for small businesses and nonprofits to do things that support, you know, sustainability, environmental justice, et cetera, that can actually help their bottom line, not just help the planet.
Maybe that's even a marketing point, right? Like maybe it's revenue neutral, but they get to say, hey, I'm also doing this. I suspect that's appealing to more and more people these days.
Oh, absolutely. So I work with a number of small food companies. I've worked with several organic, you know, family-owned farms in the West and small organic nutrition bar companies in the West, typically also. And, you know, what they do is they're really focused on, you know, growing and producing clean food. And so they find that they can really add a lot of value and pass that on to consumers because they're willing to pay for quality. You know, they want to know that the food they're eating is sourced from, you know, farms that don't spread terrible pesticides and use neonicotinoids and things like that. And they want to know that the beef they're eating is being fed, you know, good grass that's not polluted and charged with, you know, fossil fuel fertilizers. Yeah.
You know, if I could ask you to do something for the world, I want fast food or fast casual restaurants to look as seriously as possible at reducing the packaging, the plastic, and the paper they hand me. And I get the feeling that that's such a nominal cost for them. This is just my impression that they don't seem to care. It's all about the beef or the employees and those wages. But I get so frustrated with some of the stuff I end up throwing away that they're handing me out the window.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so that's, you know, you asked about, you know, where they could save money. Well, I actually do spend a fair amount of money on you know, plastic utensils and plastic containers and napkins and straws and all those things. And so in Chicago, you know, they recently passed an ordinance that restaurants are not allowed to, or they're not supposed to at least, you know, just hand out all the extra stuff that they normally hand out for takeout and delivery unless people ask for it. Mm-hmm. Now, they're not all complying with it, but I think that's going to make a difference. And the companies actually save money because they're not wasting money on these products that people don't want and end up in the landfill or on the street.
Boy, I wish they would take that message to heart because I eat at restaurants in Chicago and order fast casual or pick up a lot, and they're not doing that very well. What percentage of the stuff actually gets recycled? How are we doing on that as businesses or citizens?
Well, it depends. It depends on the state. It depends on the city. It depends on the material. But plastics People think, you know, there's a, you know, the big plastic manufacturers and distributors, you know, claim that they're really into recycling, but plastic is just not very good for recycling for the most part. And most of the plastic that ends up in landfills and the stuff that you're talking about is single-use plastic, you know, shrink wrap on a, you know, on a donut or something like
right,
that. Right. And only about, you know, in, across the United States, only about 9% of the plastic waste actually gets recycled. And even if it's recycled, it degrades over time. So it's just not a very, it's not a very good thing, you know, for the environment or for society. And you know, there are lots of other things that they can use. And I think I'm starting to see a little bit of movement more back towards, you know, paper wrappers and things like that, which is better. And then yeah. if you design them properly and use, you know, extremely you know, sustainable materials like bamboo, et cetera. And then there's some leaves from India that can be used for packaging. And those things, you know, they don't add anything to the carbon footprint.
Hey, small businesses, you can play a major role in the green initiative by taking common sense action steps. That's what you say. And if folks want to reach out to Andrew Clark, the president of Ground Floor Partners, groundfloorpartners.com is the website. Very interesting, Andrew. Thanks for visiting with us today.
Okay, thank you.